Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on this Taco Tuesday. And we're going to switch to Dipper number three as well. So Union Blues, although I just had a chance to speak to my guest a moment ago off the air, and he said you might want to continue calling this a walk in Biden's world because it fits. So you may be keenly aware of the fact that the United Auto Workers has made an extra determined effort to try and unionize Alabama's auto manufacturing plants. Between that on the national level, the teachers' unions just doing their thing on the national level, and then the SEIU and name them, they're all over the place. But there's an empowerment of unionization right now like we've not seen in modern history. Well, Mark Mix is the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Also serves as president of the National Right to Work Committee, which is a 2.8 million member public policy organization. Basically, they're out there in the fight on the issues of unionization. Under his leadership, by the way, the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation has continued to provide legal assistance, free legal assistance, to workers, and has utilized cutting-edge legal strategies to protect workers from the abuse of compulsory unionism. Basically, he's one of the good guys, and he's on the air with us right now. Mark Mix, how are you, sir?
Bill, I'm doing great. Thanks for the opportunity to talk with you today, and thanks for the last 15 minutes of your show. I was watching, paying attention, and you're doing important stuff, that's for sure.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it very much. Well, listen, I tell you what, I think it'd be beneficial before we go too much further for my audience to hear, what is the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation? I mean, I'm familiar with special interest law firms. Is that what you guys are, and how does it work?
Well, yeah, I guess we're special interest. We're in the interest of individual employees and their rights. The Right to Work Foundation has been around since 1968. We have 20 staff attorneys that do nothing but represent employees in their rights and their battles to basically protect their rights and expand their rights in the American workplace. Unfortunately, federal labor policy handed down almost 100 years ago says that union officials can have workers fired from their job if they fail to pay dues or fees. And so we've been defending workers since 1968. We provide that legal services for free. We have about 260 active cases today as you and I speak. And so we're out there defending individual employee rights and their liberty in the American workplace.
Well, that's outstanding. I mean, I spent 8 years in the Alabama Senate. We actually enhanced our own right to work laws here and even embedded it in our state constitution. So right to work is a big deal for Alabama. But let me ask you, Mark, on the national scene, am I right in saying that the unionization efforts, the big labor, is somewhat empowered under the Biden administration right now?
Yeah, absolutely, Phil. You know, President Joe Biden, then candidate Joe Biden, promised to union officials back in 2019 and 2020 from his basement saying he would be the most pro-union president in American history. And while part of that's true, what he really meant to say was he was going to be the most pro-forced unionism president in American history, because most of the policies and the executive actions he's taken have been to empower union officials, giving them more privilege and more power to basically impose their will on workers across the country. Because if he was really for rank-and-file workers, for union members and those that support unions and those that, you know, may not want to be in a union but have to be because of federal law that forces them to associate with a union that may be in the workplace before they even get there, what he's done is he's hurt rank-and-file workers. And that was pretty evident. The very first issue that came about in the under the executive powers of the president was to shut down the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
Well, Phil, you remember oh, yeah. that battle that under Obama it was you couldn't go forward. Trump basically said, let's go forward, help the energy production in the country and the refining production in the country. Well, Joe Biden promised the union officials and the environmentalists before he was elected he would shut it down the moment that he became president. Now, this is a union-only job where only union members were on the job under what's called a project labor agreement. And so when he shut it down 1 week into his presidency, he put a whole bunch of union rank-and-file members on the unemployment line. And the other things he's done policy-wise on the railroad strike and other issues have given union officials dramatic power over workers, not given workers any new powers at all. And so he is the most pro-forced unionism president in American history, making good on a promise he made at the beginning of his administration. And that manifests itself through lots of other areas, including now what is now a $40 million attack on the Alabama automotive industry by the United Auto Workers Union.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that UAW thing here in Alabama in a minute. But I think we've seen, you know, Biden talks about his whole of government approach to everything he does. Whole of government approach is even in the projection of union empowerment right now, even to the extent that, if I'm not mistaken, in his infrastructure bills and his, you know, Inflation Reduction Act bills, he literally provided credits as long as the electric vehicles you buy came from a union plant. I mean, he even specifies where you're going to get tax credits for buying goods in his legislation.
Yeah, that's right. It looks like you read the bills when you were in the legislature because you're paying attention to the details now. So good for you, but you're exactly right. One of the things that's happened most dramatically is this whole of government approach, meaning the National Labor Relations Board is kind of the central figure of this expansion of labor union power. And so the nominees that Biden put forward and the Senate confirmed many by tie-breaking votes by Kamala Harris were former union attorneys. The general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board is a former union attorney for the Communication Workers of America. Two of the members of the board are former union attorneys for the SEIU. One of them, another one there, Laura McFerrin, who's the chairman of the board, was a union attorney. And so they have turned this into kind of a whole of government approach by using memorandum of understandings with the Department of Justice, the Department of Energy, the Department of Labor, with the OSHA, with the Environmental Protection Agency. They have all of these people looking out for any quote-unquote injustice. I'm using my finger quotes here, Phil. You can't see that. That maybe an employer has committed against an employee, and they're empowering union officials to gather more power for that. So it is true. It's a whole of government approach, not just the Department of Labor, not just the National Labor Relations Board, but the Biden administration's executive agencies using all their power to promote union power across the country for sure.
Well, so as you guys take the fight to them, the reality is you're defending employees. So I think a lot of folks don't realize what right to work even means, and I do. But I thought, you know what? Since you're president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense, first of all, if you wouldn't mind, describe what a right to work law is, so people know what that means.
Yeah, Phil, it's really, really simple. And if it were any more difficult, I couldn't do this job. We believe that every worker has the right to join a union, participate in a union, associate with a union as they choose to do so, but that no worker should be compelled as a condition of getting or keeping a job to pay union dues or fees in order to keep their jobs. 26 states, including Alabama, have right to work laws on the books today, and they are very, very simple. It doesn't stop anyone. In fact, in the Huntsville area, the union density in Alabama is much higher than the union density in several states that don't have right to work laws, because what it does, it requires union officials to be held accountable by rank and file workers by voting with their pocketbooks and saying, you know what, if you continue to raise these radical political issues, I don't have to pay you and I won't pay you. In the states that don't have right to work, then if you don't pay your dues or fees, you'll lose your job flat out, whether you're the best employee, the worst employee, a mediocre employee, a black employee, a white employee, doesn't matter. If you don't pay dues to a private organization, you can't work in those states where the union represents, quote unquote, represents you.
Well, and we're also seeing on a national level, and I'll take this piece of our discussion up to the break. I'll tell you what, let me ask you this. We're going to talk a few more minutes, but can you hang on during a break so I know that we can stage this conversation a little bit further? Would that work for you?
Absolutely, Phil. Okay. Glad to do that.
Okay, well, great. Then let me ask you this question then. We're seeing in some places right now that there are employee efforts to decertify the union altogether. Like they're saying, like, we're done with you. We want out. We don't even want you to hear anymore. Is that a national movement? Are you seeing that kind of trend?
Yeah, absolutely. There's about a 40% increase year over year in the number of decertification elections. A certification election is how a union gets in. A decertification election is how employees can throw the union out. Now, here's a quiz for you, Phil, and I know you can probably answer this question. What do you think is easier, to get the union in or to get the union out?
Well, I think once they get their craggy fingers in there, good luck. I mean, but, that's
right. And here's an example from Alabama. In Hamilton, Alabama, back at a company called NTN Bauer, The employees there who were represented by the UAW, they started their representation back in 1976, and the UAW's demands on these workers got more intense and more intense. So the workers there put together, it has to be just the employees. The employer can't have any part in this at all. If they do, then you can't get this election. So the employees got together. They got the right number of signatures. They had a first election, and the employees won. The union got to be, should have been thrown out. The union challenges the election results. The NLRB overturns the election. They rerun it. They have election number two. The employees win again, and the union fights, overturns it. The NLRB demands that a rerun election. They have election number three. This time, Phil, the union wins. Happy day for the union. Unfortunately for them, there were more votes cast in the union election than there were members and workers at the plant.
Wow.
So the NLRB had to throw the election out because, obviously, those results couldn't be true. Election number four, the employees win again. The union objects. The NLRB orders a rerun election. Election number five, the workers win. The UAW finally says, okay, I guess we've had enough. They've had enough. They walk away. Five elections to try to get rid of a union as opposed to one election to get in. So we've seen, year over year, we've had over 130 different issues with folks calling us saying, can you help us exercise our rights through decertification? That's an unprecedented number for our organization, and we think that's about 55 to 60% of all the decert petitions that are filed with the National Labor Relations Board that are coming through our office. But there, to your point, there's been a dramatic increase in the number of times where employees are trying to get the union out, but it's very difficult.
It's like trying to get rid of a fungal infection. I mean, my gosh. All right. Well, listen, I tell you what, Mark Mix from the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, we're going to get you to hold on during a break. We're going to take a break because we got to go ahead and give some of our folks a shameless plug so they can support the show. And then we'll come right back and wrap this conversation up. We appreciate your time. All right. Listen, we are taking a break. You're listening to Right Side Radio. Phil Williams live in the studio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're going right back to the phones right now. Mark Mix is with us. He's the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. We're in number three of today's Triple Dipper. I'm calling this section Union Blues. Mark, let me jump on the topic of the UAW's efforts in Alabama. By the way, you've got some Alabama background, I understand.
Well, politically, and you're going to begin to want to play politics, you got to go to Alabama. But I was back there battling Paul Hubbard, who then was the president of the Alabama Education Association, probably one of the most powerful. His apex of power was in the late 1990s and when he ran for governor and all that good stuff. You remember him, too. I can see you on the screen. You're smiling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that was the zenith of teachers union efforts. And I'm proud to say that I was able to be a part of helping to emasculate the teachers union for a number of years. They're starting to regain some of their strength because I think too many Republicans left in the legislature don't remember the fight. But but let me ask you this. The UAW, sour grapes, they lost their vote at Mercedes. They, of course, came out and protested. Why would they do anything else, right? It's always somebody else's fault. So they're gonna try again, but the National Labor Relations Board, they hold this thing in their hands right now. What do you anticipate here?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Phil. Well, the news is not good. So here's the way this works. And this is another day in the life of Joe Biden, in that in August of last year, the National Labor Relations Board, who we talked about in the first segment, basically decided a case called CEMEX. CEMEX is a concrete production company based in Mexico, has affiliates in the United States. And basically that case came down and decided that secret ballot elections were no longer the best use of kind of determining whether or not employees wanted to be in a union. They believe that the card check is sufficient. The card check is when the union officials can get someone to sign a card saying, I want to be in a union. They believe that's the best mechanism. But in part of that CEMEX decision, one of the things that happened was they said that if an employer commits an unfair labor practice charge during a union election or before a union election, that the board, instead of issuing an order to rerun the election, to have a rerun and have a new vote, what they want to do is just basically say, okay, the employer has violated the so-called laboratory conditions necessary to conduct a ballot, and therefore they'll just impose a bargaining order on the company. That's exactly what's going to happen here in Mercedes. In fact, right before the vote for certification, the United Auto Workers filed unfair labor practice charges with the National Labor Relations Board. And they did that because that's standard operating procedure. Now, if you want to be able to block the outcome of an election, you file these ULPs before the election, and if you lose it, you go back and say, well, these unfair labor practice charges need to be adjudicated. And if the NLRB finds that there was one violation, just one in many ULPs that might be filed, then they have the power to order recognition and bargaining order with the company saying, despite the outcome of the election, despite the vote, we are now imposing that you That's negotiate unreal. With the UAW over your employees.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened here at Mercedes-Benz. They filed the unfair labor practice charges. Then they came in with the election. They lost the election by over 600 votes with 90% of the workers participating in that election. And because the results came out against them, they have now said they're filing objections to the election. So the election has not been certified. It's now in the hands of the regional director over in Atlanta. They will decide whether to issue a complaint. If they issue a complaint, then an administrative law judge will adjudicate these ULPs. And if they decide that the company, Mercedes-Benz, committed an unfair labor practice charge, it's likely the NLRB will order them to negotiate with the United Auto Workers. Mercedes-Benz can then appeal that. That will go to the National Labor Relations Board for an adjudication by the entire board. And then they have access to the federal courts, too. So this could go on for years. But suffice to say, the UAW is an election denier. Just like they were in the NTN Bauer case, they're denying the results of the election.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And you know, we only got about a minute left here, Mark. But, you know, our state legislature just passed recently legislation that says that in the event that a company decides to go ahead and bypass the vote and begin direct negotiations with the union, that they can lose all of their economic incentives provided by the state. So, you know, we're trying to take a stand on this. But in the end, we've still got an NLRB that we have to deal with, which has got, you know, any number of, you know, all of whole of government liberal incentives right now to just do it the union way.
Yeah, and they've got federal jurisdiction and federal preemption as well, Phil, which are other problems. But we'll be there to fight and we'll help. And I appreciate you bringing this issue to the forefront.
Well, we're going to stay on it. This is about the third or fourth time that I've done it, but it's the first time I've had you on. But hopefully, it's not the last. Mark Mix, president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. If folks want to find out more about you, where do they find you? Can you tell them online?
Yeah, they can go to that amazing internet at www.nrtw.org. nrtw.org.
All right, that's great, Mark. Hey, thanks for your time. We appreciate you working with us today, man.
Thanks, Phil.
All right, take care. There's great organizations out there doing amazing things in fighting for conservative policy. And oh, by the way, there's different venues for the fight. And theirs is the choice is to fight within the court system. You have others that fight within the legislative branch. And then you have some that lobby on behalf of conservative policy in the executive branch. All I'm saying is this. There is a means and a method by which we can attack these things from different angles, but we got to have good, strong groups with people supporting them along the way. National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, I just found out about them, but I like what I hear so far. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here. I'm talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, let me pause here a second before I go any further. Let me just pause here a second, and I seriously want to give you guys something big to think about. So this is a crazy world, right? And yet here you are, you're working hard to plan for your future and try to stand up for your beliefs at the same time. So what if you found out that some of the things that you're doing, you're investing in without even realizing it, your investments are going to things that are absolutely contrary to what you believe in? Well, let me suggest to you that it may be time for you to meet Paul Breyer. Paul Breyer and his team of PhDs and financial experts at Inspire Advisors. That's Inspire Advisors. I'm talking about financial planning that considers who you are and what you believe in, as well as your bottom line. So these are like solid local experts using biblically responsible investing, data-driven strategies to try and maximize your return, but they're doing so in a way that has real impact on your bottom line and the world in which we all live. This is what I would call financial freedom, y'all. If you want to know more about what's in your portfolio, let me give you an opportunity to get something for free here. Go to their website, www.moneypatternwealth.com. That's moneypatternwealth.com, and get a free impact report. Very cool. That's Inspire Advisors at www.moneypatternwealth.com. You can also go to our website, rightsideradio.org, and click on the sponsors tab, and you can find their logo. Click on it. It'll take you right to their website. So, yeah, that's Inspire Advisors at www.moneypatternwealth.com. Conservative, godly, balanced financial freedom with Inspire Advisors. Check them out. All right, let me take you a little further down the road in this discussion about union blues. So I will tell you this. Yes, unions are openly hostile to conservative policies, generally speaking, but here's the thing. The rank and file is not always that way. Now, granted, there are some that are like, all about the union. It's all for the union. I got to live for the union. And I get it. There's going to be some who just, you know, are all in. They could care less. But you're also seeing trends away from that. Now, think about what the unions are trying to accomplish, though. Because if you think that the teachers' union is for education, it's not. If you think that the SEIU is to increase services in the service sector, they're not. If you think for a second that United Auto Workers just want to build better cars, they are not. I mean, you got a story here from CBS that came out in September of last year. The headline should say a lot, right? Auto jobs are booming in the union-hostile South. Well, that's considered a bad thing, apparently. How about this? Let's read that differently. Auto jobs are more available to you if you want to come to the South, where we typically have right-to-work laws that protect you. And the unions are not the guarantors of everything. How they can possibly look at this as being, well, there's not a lot of union presence in the Deep South, therefore it's bad, but also say at the same time there's more jobs? I mean, think about, well, Phil, they're not paying enough. Paying enough. Have you seen the cost of living in Alabama versus some of the big cities? I mean, cost of living is pretty good here. You can get a lot of house, and you can get more quality of life out of every dollar here than you can in most places. And oh, by the way, Alabama was just named in the last few months as being the number one state for auto manufacturing in the nation. And we did all of that without a heavy union presence. Now, I don't think unions haven't been here. I mean, they've been here. Oh, they've been here. I'm sitting in Gadsden, Alabama right now where the studio is, which is the former home of Gulf State Steel and the former home of Goodyear Tires, both of whom drove the economy here for years. If you were not a union member or the family of a union member, then it's only because, you know, you were on the outs or you were a doctor or something like that. You know, the reality is everybody was a member of the union or had a family member who was. Thousands of people in Gadsden. At some point, upwards of 12% of the local citizenry was a union member working in one of the plants, and they're all gone. How about this story here off of Syracuse.com, local news in New York. Labor unions are zeroing in on Micron Technology's planned chip-making plant in central New York. They haven't even got the plant built yet. A semiconductor chip plant. Why would they do this? What's the point? Well, you know, unions are kind of underrepresented in the semiconductor companies. I don't think I would have thought of that. But then they point out, oh, by the way, the Biden administration just pushed for and got through Congress the $52 billion Chips and Science Act. Oh, so we're about to see a bunch of new plants open. Oh, with upwards of 70,000 workers. Oh, now we understand. They smell the new membership. And they're going to go out there and they're going to jump on right at a time when the Biden administration is telling us how important it is that everything be electric and everything be in, you know, net zero, and semiconductor chips are going to be a huge piece of that. They pass a $52 billion act. They're going to subsidize the new sets of a new batch of plants for the industry, 70,000 new jobs. Quick, let's unionize them. How about the Chicago Teachers Union? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those who know, know. Chicago Teachers Union, according to Fox News, Dateline right at 30 days ago. Chicago Teachers Union is negotiating a new contract. Oh, because because the old one's so old. Didn't they just go on strike like last year? The Chicago Teachers Union is negotiating a new contract with the public school systems, understood to be calling for, brace yourselves, wait for it, an extra $50 billion to pay for wage hikes. Excuse me? Let me put this in context. The total base tax receipts for the entire state of Illinois were $50 billion. So basically what they're saying is, all of the tax receipts you've got, we want them. We do. Well, why? I mean, you're like, only 21% of the city's eighth graders can even read at, you know, grade level right now. Why? Well, because we want it. And oh, by the way, they don't just want $50 billion to pay for new wage hikes. They also want fully paid state abortions, new migrant services and facilities, because that's part of their job, I guess, and a host of LGBTQ-related requirements and trainings in schools. Well, now, let's make sure we cover all the bases in the liberal agenda. Get this right now. Here's the deal. This would mean year-over-year 9% pay increases for teachers' union members in Chicago. It would also, by the way, mean that right now, currently, a Chicago public school teacher makes $93,000 a year. The average salary of a teacher in Chicago is $93,000 a year, and it would bump this to $144,000 a year by 2027. $144,000 a year, which is more than double the median household income in Chicago. So basically, if you want to get rich, be a teacher in Chicago. Meanwhile, their eighth grade reading proficiency is in the tank. You're looking at students not even reaching grade level on a regular basis. But it's not about the education of the kids, is it? It really isn't. It's about the union. It's about the power. It's about the restructuring of the economy. It's about getting what they want. Get me some of mine. I want some of mine. I'm going after the man. I'm getting some of mine. Get out and run a company one day and see how that really feels. But I will tell you this. There's been some pushback, and I'll finish this up with these last two articles here. I love this. And I'm looking at isolated instances in some degree, but I'm seeing there's also pushback. Like a story here that CBS just ran a couple days ago. In Elk Grove, Illinois, I believe it is. Elk Grove, Illinois, a teacher is suing his own union for discrimination. Say what? Yep, he's suing his own union because he's white. I'm sorry? You heard me. High school teacher Isaac Newman was thumbing through the discrimination lawsuit as he talked to the reporter and said that basically, yep, the job that they are advertising was for Black, Indigenous, and people of color as a board member. And I applied for it, and I'm white, and they said I couldn't have it, and that's discrimination. Well, good for you, man. So let me get this straight. The union was doing this. Yes. He was banned because of the color of his skin. The Elk Grove Teachers Association created the so-called BIPOC position in the aftermath of 2019 data showing that Elk Grove School District had suspended Black students more than any other in the district of the state. So they formed a board membership position that is only for BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Except you can't do that. You don't set up positions and go, by the way, this one's only for white people. I'm sorry. You need not apply. Did I mention, by the way, that this particular job is only for women? You need not apply. Did I point out to you, oh, by the way, that if you're Asian, you need not apply? You can't do that stuff. You would think that a union with all their dues money could pay for a lawyer that would give them some advice. Lastly, story with a little bit of broader flavor. Fox News, Dateline, 30 days ago, May 6th. For the sixth year in a row, the National Education Association faces a mass exodus of its members. Yes, but the blame doesn't lie with a shrinking student population. It's what's considered to be a crisis of its own making. You've got basically the NEA's blatant prioritization of radical political agendas at the expense of its member representation, resulting in a loss of more than 12,000 members in 2023, per their latest report. So basically what you've got here is people who are looking around and going, I don't like the state of our nation. I'm not voting for that, and yet you use my dues to support that. I want out. During the 2023 school year, the NEA funneled a whopping $176 million of its dues revenue from teachers' paychecks to political candidates and ideological causes. Spending in support of the union's political agenda constituted 34% of their budget. And teachers have, listen, I think the union, teachers' union, is it just sucks at every level. But I will say this, I know a bunch of rank and file who do not agree with the situation that their union presents. I know a bunch of teachers. I know a bunch of factory workers. I know a bunch of folks who are rank and file, blue collar, solid, salt of the earth, would trust them with my own grandchildren kind of people who do not believe what the union believes. And the union has, by the way, this UAW vote, stop and ask yourself, why did the UAW's national president come out recently in support of the protesters who are protesting Israel and calling for Hamas to be supported? Why? Why would they do that? Why did the UAW feel so empowered to come to Alabama and take the logos for University of Alabama and Auburn University and try to put them on T-shirts and pretend that those universities supported their efforts and then get called out on it? And then he still wore the shirt at the announcement when the vote came in. Listen, they could care less what the rank and file really thinks. It's about the membership and the dues. It's about the power. I'm just telling you, it's a union blues, man. Better be pushing back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're going to take a break right now. We will come right back and take a bunch of text messages and head to the house. It's go home time, you people. Right Side Ruffians, y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just making common sense like a superpower, giving you all of the things you can put on a bumper sticker. I'll go to the phone real quick. Jeff Rowe from Indiana is on the line. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I've had better days.
Wow, what's going on?
I sit down there at Falkville for 2 hours, not this time waiting on trailer, but because somebody left me a trailer with a bad tire and I at the tire shop for 2 hours.
Well, I was afraid you were going to tell me some of that fried fish finally got to you, but okay.
No, I ate McDonald's today, and that might be even worse than fried fish, believe me.
Well, you back on the road now, though?
Yes, I am. I'm in Tennessee, man. I'm heading north. But
All right.
You know, I'm thinking those tire workers might have gotten unionized because there's about four or five of them standing around looking at that tire and everything. I think they was trying to change it telepathically, but it just didn't work out.
Well, I'm sure they all paid their dues and had to get a coffee break. So,
sure something. So, I think I need to be unionized here. I'm sitting around watching other people not work, and I'm not getting paid for it either.
Last thing we need is all our ruffians getting unionized and then calling in and telling us they need to dominate the time without even speaking. That would not work.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think?
You know,
go ahead.
But these union things and everything, the diminishing returns we don't think about is as high as everything is here in the United States and the labor costs and everything else. How are you going to export anything? Because I don't think these other people in these other countries are making near the wages we are, and it just keeps going up and up and up. And if I had a manufacturing outfit here in the States with all the Biden regulations and the labor expenses, I'd be going overseas if possible, because it's no longer feasible to be here.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you look at it, it doesn't just damage our economy. It damages us on the global economy. And there's a time and a place. I mean, I recognize in the past that there was abuse of workers. But now what we're having is abuse of the right to unionize. And it's gone beyond the pale. Did you hear that thing I talked about, the Chicago Teachers Union a minute ago?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, maybe. Hey, maybe I can go become a failed teacher in Chicago.
I just wonder. I mean, do they do that with a straight face and to sit around and so in the bubble they go like, yeah, this is a really good idea. I mean, does anybody ever speak up and go, excuse me, dose of reality? That's not going to work.
Uh, you, if you remember, I've told you about our little superintendent before and everything, how he made about 3 years of sick pay for 2 years of work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the kind of things that come out of this stuff. And, you know, there's just not enough money in education, apparently.
Apparently not. And, you know, what's interesting is they also, and I get it, they work hard. I've got family members that are teachers. I get it. There's long days. You get there early. If you love the kids, you really, you know, you're going to invest yourself into it mentally and emotionally, too. But you still wind up having long holidays, great benefits. And yes, the pay is lower, but you knew that going in. And the idea that these people in Chicago were going to ask for their, you know, to basically get rewarded for their tepid behavior is just unbelievable to me.
Well, the pay is lower in some cases. It's according to what you are. It's not lower. They're making more money than the president of the United States in some cases. You know, superintendents in some of these large cities and everything.
Yeah.
They're making over $400,000. I guarantee it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All right, brother, we're about out of time. Be safe on the road, okay?
All right, Phil. Have a good one, buddy.
All right, we'll see you, man. I got several. I had a ton of text messages I couldn't even get to, but we're not going to make it. Looks like. But John from Huntsville did text the grades. He says, "Phil, your performance today earns you an A+. Oh, sorry, A-. Wow. Wolverine Dan gets an A++ for his very passionate, very spot-on phone call. But I got to give the win to my favorite sound effect man, my fellow songwriter, brother Big Rig. He says, with a special supersonic A++ for his best performance ever. So
I appreciate that.
That's good stuff.
He must love Taco Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday sound effect may be his favorite, it sounds like.
I think I've won every Taco Tuesday.
Oh, do we have any? Okay, see, now I'm starting to fix. So next week we don't play the sound effect to see if you still win.
Probably not.
Craig from Harvest says unions exist to grow their own power, influence, and control. I'm suspicious of any entity that organized crime has historically fought to own and control. Wow. Great point. All right, listen, amazing audience. We love you. We're back here tomorrow, too. Y'all have a great night. We'll see you then.